All of the food we eat and much of the clothing we wear comes from plants and animals that are raised on farms. Farms are different in type, in size, and even in name.
Welcome to Barn Talk. What happens at the barn stays in the barn, but not today. We're going to let it all out for you guys. Today is going to be a guest episode. Got a real special guest. This is the first time we've ever had, actually second time we've ever had a reoccurring guest. So this person, you've seen him before, farms in southern Iowa, got a lot of stuff going on. He's into tiling. He's into grain farming. He's into the hay business. He's got a new venture him and his wife have been working on, and they actually got it up and running. Am I missing anything? Tiling business, he's got that too. So he's kind of the jack of all trades, young, hustling, trying to make a buck, trying to stay into farming, trying to grow his operation best he can. He's got a YouTube channel. And so you guys know the drill. Before we get into this, share it out with who you know. The more that you guys do that, the more the show grows, the more we can get better guests on, the more episodes we can make. Feel free to also leave a review on Spotify or Apple. That gives our show more credibility and better guests we can get on if we're more credible. Last thing you could do to support the show, if you love what we're doing and you get value from it, is you can head over to farmergrade.com and you can buy some meat from us. We launched a direct-to-consumer meat business last year, and we're going strong, and we'd love to provide your family with some meat. And you can use code BARNTALK to save 10% off your next order. So without further ado, let's get into it. Iowan Farmer, aka Ben Van Roekel, welcome back to Barn Talk.
You're flirting with danger. It's like the sequel is rarely ever as good as the original. But
I don't know about that. Well, the last episode we did with Ben, it went off. The clips, the shorts on YouTube went off. And I think people just like you because it's just real, authentic farmer-to-farmer conversation. I think we're just going to do more of that today, just talk about what we think about this upcoming season, how last harvest went for you. You got some new stuff going on the farm, and just shoot the shit, I guess. So,
yeah, definitely, because it was like, well, thank you for that. But, like, it was interesting. We actually toured Farmer Grade before we came here, and we were talking about, like, okay, last time we were here basically a year ago now was, like, both of us kind of had something in the back pocket that neither of us had talked about in public about – you know, that value add business for to bring back to the farm. And we were doing a pumpkin patch. We didn't know that it was coming to actually happen because the ground hadn't sold yet that we bought, and you guys were doing farmer grade. So it's, I guess we got a chance to talk about that and kind of see how things go.
Yeah. So before we get into all of it, where can people find you?
So Iowan Farmer on YouTube, that is the main spot to find me. Okay. And then there's Iowan Farmer on every other platform, but my brain only really works in YouTube world, so that's where I hang out.
What about the pumpkin patch? I know you guys got
so,
that, too.
Pumpkin patch, yeah. That was one thing that we learned is that needed to basically diversify the audience a little bit. So Molly created an actual YouTube channel called Patch You Later for the pumpkin patch, for Papo's pumpkin patch. We haven't gotten too much out on that yet, so I don't even know if it's broke 1,000 subscribers or not yet, but
it will now.
It will now, and we'll be kicking out all the pumpkin patch fun stuff on that channel this year for basically kind of a little more personal stuff, a little different editing style than what Iowan Farmer has done for the past 5 years. So it'll be more a little Molly and I's relationship, family type of stuff, kind of a little more entertainment, I guess you could say.
The kindler, gentler Iowan Farmer.
Yeah, there you go.
More refined.
Yeah. The pumpkin holder.
There you go.
You'll have to hold your beer with one finger out.
That's probably true.
Yeah, so tell us about the pumpkin patch and anything else that's kind of new and exciting in your neck of the woods.
So I don't know where we could start with the pumpkin patch whole idea. Well, you could probably start back is that it's just like the mindset of I started farming in 2014 when things are very similar to what's happening in 2024, 10 years later. Obviously, this would now be my 10th year of farming. Commodity prices were dropping, and, you know, the input prices are still pretty darn high. Profit margins are going tighter. And then for the first 6-7 years of my farming career, margins were tight or not even there for growing a row crop. So I've always just kind of always had the idea of my mind of how can I, you know, find other sources of income, or, you know, a little bit of entrepreneurship, if you want to say that. And that was bred into me over those 6 years of you got to find other ways to bring money into the farm, because you can't just sell your crop and live off of that when things are like they are. So I was always looking for those opportunities. And 1 year I would always plant what I called the fun plot. And it was like a half an acre right there at my shop. I've done the cover crops, the buzzword stuff, 60 inch corn, all kinds of oddball things. And then 1 year it was wet in the spring and that didn't happen. And so we're like, what can we plant in June-ish, or even actually it was closer to July, that we could grow a crop here? And pumpkins kind of was like, ding, we could plant some pumpkins. I drove around to like all the Walmarts and bought all their pre-growing pumpkin plants, because I was like, that's the only way we'll ever even get pumpkins to make it. So we went out there, we hilled out the pumpkins and we planted some pumpkins. Some of them lasted, had no clue what we were really planting. It was a mess, a weedy mess, like, oh man. So anyways, I grew pumpkins and it was kind of cool because you'd like walk out in there and you'd be like, dang, look at that pumpkin. It's like, that's a big old pumpkin right there. Well, the issue is that I didn't have anything to do with the pumpkins. So actually Molly posted on Facebook, with the Iowan farmer thing, I just didn't want everybody showing up to my farm, necessarily to grab a pumpkin type of thing, to manage that, because I wasn't there, you know, not necessarily now people and viewers show up to the pumpkin patch, which I really enjoy, but I didn't want people there at my shop because people were there at my shop picking the pumpkins when I was harvesting.
Get a pumpkin and a wrench or a toolbox.
There you go. So that'd be kind of the way it would be. And so Molly posted on Facebook, hey, if you got kids, come on out, pick some pumpkins free of charge, just to get rid of them. And then she took some straw bales, set up a couple of displays, you know, made it pretty so that the families could, if they wanted to take their picture there. Well, that went off good.
And light bulb.
People showed up and they grabbed their pumpkins. They took their pictures. They really liked it. Well, that was it. That was done. Well, it did trigger in the back of my mind a little bit about like, this could be another crop. Maybe I could grow a little bit of some pumpkins to sell some of these pumpkins. Never really had the idea of like the whole pumpkin patch necessarily yet. Well, then Molly started to get messages that next spring, basically saying, are you guys going to grow pumpkins again next year, when she'd like be getting her haircut or somebody see her or things along those lines. And then it kind of brewed in my mind a little bit more, like maybe we could do a pumpkin patch. Well, then you kind of do, you look at, you know, what's your competition in your area? Well, for us, it's 50-minute drive to any other pumpkin patch anywhere around. So it's like, well, we're not saturated here. So we actually have like a marketing opportunity. So let's continue to look at this. Well, we looked at it and the issue is that you got to find a piece of ground to do this on. And I kind of was like, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. Which the other aspects of this was Molly and I had not been married yet. And Molly has always wanted to own her own business. And I wanted to facilitate that dream of letting having her own and run her own business type of thing. So I'm like, pumpkin patch works, because she was looking at wedding barns, but I mean, you throw a stone and you hit a wedding barn down by us. So, literally. And, so it was like wedding venues don't work, but maybe this is, could be something along this, those lines. It's still event planning. And she's really good at that. So then you're looking at your partner and then also looking at their strengths about what they can do. This like really fits into it. And then for me, I get to continue to grow a crop, you know, and do something fun. And I always liked interacting with the public. So we start looking for pieces of ground. We found one or two that kind of fit the criteria. Went to go purchase one of the pieces of ground, and the guy legitimately wanted probably $1,200 more an acre than what it would sell at an auction. So it was like, that one's out. So we didn't find any pieces of ground to find, I guess, to purchase that fit the criteria of being next to the population, being good access to a road, being somewhat flat to like grow and have that type of stuff. Well, year speed up later, we were kind of like, well, we need to keep looking for it. And actually, a piece of ground popped up and it was like, dang, this is like in the right spot. And May 10th, 2023, we closed on that piece of ground and bought 27 acres and hit the ground running trying to build a pumpkin patch.
You're back at Walmart looking for pumpkin?
Back at Walmart trying to buy pumpkins. Which we talk about that it took 4 months and 5 days to actually go from an actual bare piece of ground to our opening day. Well, that was...
That's pretty impressive.
It is, like, the actual work to get done. But on the backside of that, you know, it was something that we were gently planning for a year and a half. So, like, I had the building kind of designed and I had bids ready to go. So I knew what that would cost. We had financing lined up that was, you know, kind of contingent on if the ground gets, you know, bought or whatever. So... all the pieces were there. I just had to assemble the puzzle, or we had to assemble the puzzle. So it wasn't like a spur of the moment go deal. We did a lot of research. We called a lot of people. We talked to a lot of people, which is really kind of interesting because it seems like farmers love to chat with each other as long as you aren't just right next to each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's like you go to any conference, it's like, man, we can chat about anything you want to chat about because you're two states away.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's That's like, absolutely but, right. You know, in pumpkin patch world, it's like you can call and chat about anything. You can ask people, like, how many pumpkins do you sell a year?
Yep.
Some people, you can kind of gauge them upon, you know, what you're having that conversation about, like, can I ask this person what the revenues are?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because if you're going to actually do a business, it's like you got to ask those questions.
Yep.
And then 100%. The sample size or who you're actually surveying, you need to try and find ones that would be very much so similar to yours. Because we're next to, I think Centerville has 5,500 people or so in there. So it's not like we're next to, you know, you're not too far from Iowa City, that type of stuff, where your guys' option to draw in a lot of people is way greater than ours. But you also have pumpkin patches that are established around here.
Yep. Exactly.
So our advantage was is that we don't have any pumpkin patches around us. The disadvantage was is that we've got a smaller population.
Yep.
So, but people from everything that we talked about were willing to travel for pumpkin patches, so we greenlit the project.
And you got an audience. So, I mean, that helps too, you know? So all that being said, has it been a good deal for you guys? Are you happy with how it's gone? Are you feel like it was worth the time and investment? Do you feel like it's good?
Absolutely. Yeah. 100%. Did it make any money our first year? No, but we've proven our business plan. So that's like from the financial side of it is that it's like, it will work out. But the other aspects of it was that there was a lot of like non-monetary awards that came from it. Building a business with your wife was really fun. It will test your relationship. And if you can make it through, it's like, you're going to, especially in your first year of marriage, you know, you got a pretty good solid foundation. Yep. The family that was out there and helping, like, man, great way to spend your time. And then on top of that, the community aspect is huge. You know, we always talked about it. We wanted it to be like a community betterment project. If we look at it, you know, kind of your generation is they're not wanting to really start new businesses.
Right.
So it is now our generation's time to where if we want to see changes in our community, it's time for us to step up and do
100%.
So we would like to see that. We want to see more family activities and, you know, things that people can get out of the house and actually create some of those core memories. And it's like, if we could provide that to our community, that's going to be great. And then maybe we can provide, you know, other opportunities where we can give back to our community in certain ways. So if we looked at our pumpkin patch, just what we were able to do in our first year, our farm store that we built, we probably had like 20% of it was like our wholesale stuff that we purchased that we couldn't like get from local people because the USDA has regulations on a lot of stupid stuff. Like we couldn't have somebody locally just buy it, like buy their jam, even though it'd be really good, safe. I'd eat it. I'd feed it to kids, anybody. But if that jam wasn't done in a commercial kitchen or a kitchen with the license,
yep,
and didn't have a certain like label on it, we couldn't sell it.
Yeah.
And we tried to find ways to like kind of package ourselves as a farmer's market. But since we had a roof over us, it doesn't count as a farmer's market.
Yeah, they could came set up outside and sold it out of the back of their car, yep, and they would have been fine. But if they, if you buy it from them, you can't resell it. Nope. And if they put them in, if you put them in your shed, they, it doesn't qualify either.
And it was all consignment agreements with us too. So even that didn't loophole it,
yep,
which is really pretty crazy, because the fact is that, you know, us as English people compared to the rules that the Amish have,
yeah,
are completely different.
Sure.
And it's like the Amish in the homemade sector of stuff have a way leg up than on,
yeah,
you know, what we, the Amish call us English, you know,
yeah,
that type of thing. So that was a little bit of a challenge, but there is one of the ways that we were able to give back. So 80% of the products in our store showcased locally,
yeah,
grown and made products from like stores in Centerville. So we had people come from a long distance away to come see our patch. And maybe they bought some popcorn from, you know, from the a store on the square. Well, next time that was really good popcorn, and they drive by and they know where that's at,
mm-hmm,
you know, that type of stuff. So we were able to showcase other businesses. The other thing that we did, we had a coffee truck. So one of the local coffee stores on the square started their own coffee truck and got them up and off the ground. So there's how we helped out somebody else. We had food trucks every single weekend. So we had different food trucks. Just to, you know, spice up the food that you get. You guys live in small town Iowa too. Yep. You can only eat at the family restaurant until you've eaten everything on that menu every single time, you know? Yep. So it's nice to get something just a little bit different every now and then. So kind of, we brought that entertainment value, yep, to them. And then on top of that, we were able to, we gave away money. We gave away quite a few donations to nonprofits. And then we were able to actually, we haunted our corn maze, which is the most fun you can have with your pants on. Scaring people in a corn maze.
Yeah, right.
And we were able to raise about $2,000 for the high school, you know, yeah, by doing that. So we were able to, you know, do these community betterment projects through that. And then on top of that, to see the response from when people come up to you and everybody says, thank a farmer. And I'm not on the boat that we need to be thanked. I'm just not there. Because it's our job. It's what we do. It's what we choose to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't necessarily need to be thanked for that. But when people do walk up to say, thank you for, you know, bringing this to the community, and they would be, or like say, please come back next year or that type of stuff, like that reward is huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the answer in a long form way of your question was this worth it? We didn't line our pockets this year, but I mean, what we were able to do for Centerville, what we were able to do for Appanoose County, the families there, and all of those non-monetary returns was, yeah, very much so worth it. More than I can expect. And actually, from what I understand, we're actually have been nominated for Appanoose County Business of the Year.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's so awesome.
Look at you. Boy, a year, and he's just wisdom.
not even in
runs,
man,
he's run for mayor.
That's adulting 101 there.
Yeah.
Damn. So,
got married and started a new business. And
yeah. Well, so, like, It sounds like I might have known what I was trying to do. I didn't. No.
Yeah.
It's like you just put your head down and you start going forward until you hit a wall. You take a little bit of a turn, you put your head back down, and you keep going forward again.
Yep.
And it's like, hopefully you don't hit a wall so hard that you knock yourself out.
Yeah.
You know, so, but it will help out in the future because, again, just like you guys did with Farmer Grade, you got to find those other sources of income to make sure that your farm is stable, get that diversification in there. Mm-hmm. And I think that was, you know, going back to starting in 2014, which I'm lucky that I worked for 6 years for free, you know, that I learned that bad times do come.
Yep.
And it's like, can you weather those bad times? Because if you can weather those bad times, good times do come back.
Yep.
So that's how I decided to keep my eye open for these little opportunities. And sometimes you can just find the one that just is like that bullseye. And for us, this agritourism, where I was able to stay within what I knew how to do. My wife was able to, like, so great at being able to plan the events and, you know, manage everything there because it is her business. I'm just the ape out in the pumpkin patch cutting pumpkins and showing kids how to pick out and find pumpkins, you know, and like cutting a corn maze. It's super rewarding.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, I mean, yeah, what we always say, it's at this point, ag, it's like get big, get bigger or die or create your own market or do what you're saying. Like there's a place in, well, I don't know, Wellman,
yeah,
that's pizza on the farm. They got a pizza oven that they make brick house or brickstone pizza and have a concert. And there's all these different ways that are coming out that people are able to do ag or tourism and direct to consumer, whatever it is. But it's like, we talked about this last time you're here. I have no desire to farm the world.
No.
I want a good chunk of, you know, I want a good amount of acres and have fun and enjoy doing it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But if you don't diversify, you're going to just only do grain farming. It sounds like you just got to keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
There, it's like we said when Titan was here. It's like there's a hell of a lot of people out there that I enjoy farming. I don't enjoy being the HR director.
I don't want to be the CEO. Eight
other people do the farming while I sit in an office. That isn't what I signed up for. That's not what I want to do.
Yep.
But that's the economics drives it that way. And this is a great way to like spin yourself out of that to where you can still enjoy what you want to do. And also, let's face it, I mean, it's a different market that may be more resilient than just putting all your eggs in one basket.
Hopefully. So, and like you guys are talking about, I think that there'd be a lot more young guys that are doing this stuff or young couples that are willing to venture out.
Yep.
And you guys learned it because probably getting to the meat business or like a direct consumer, anything where you have to process anything live, the regulations, even with at the pumpkin patch that we ran into are crazy.
It's almost like they don't want you to do it.
That's very much so like they don't want you to do it.
Yeah.
You know, even where we tried to like we kind of chatted a little bit about, we were trying to have some local meat that we were going to put into a freezer so people could come out there and grab a piece of local meat. Well, you know, we did all our research that we thought, you know, because we were a little naive, I guess you could say, where we were like, okay, well, if we call, you know, the inspectors and say, what do we need to do so that we can do this? And then they tell you, you don't have anything, you know, that you need to do. You just need to be able to make sure. And then when they say, well, no, you have to do this afterwards. So that's hard, you know? And I think that there's people like that would just give up. And I can't blame them for that, you know, because sometimes you hit that, like I said, you hit that wall and it's like, there's no way around it. Like for us this year, we were able to, like we had to pay a lawyer to like look over this deal to find us a way to get, you know, meat into the store. And by the time we got everything done and we got approved for a variance, that that basically that was out the door.
Yeah.
So, and how many times can you do that until you say, enough, maybe this just doesn't work?
Yeah.
You know, and it's like you guys, I listened to your guys' podcast about all the things that you ran into. It's like you had to keep chugging through them to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And again, it goes back to the, just put your head down and keep going.
Yeah.
You know,
you're refusing to quit. I mean, that's what it takes.
Yeah.
Solving problems.
We had the Secretary of Ag on here just a couple weeks ago. And I feel like that is something that they're very aware of and they're trying to help is make that whole process for direct to consumer and
local goods
and local, but it's government. So it moves very slow because like there's a deal on the meat side that this is just perfect example, like what you're talking about. So, you know, there's lockers that are state inspected that sell a product and the state inspection is just as stringent as the USDA inspection, but they don't have a USDA sticker.
No difference.
The inspection is the same. They have to meet the same standard. So if you drive over here from Illinois and buy a meat stick, that's okay. But if that guy wants to put it on and ship it, can't do it because it's not USDA inspected.
Yeah.
And there's no difference.
Because we chatted with a local meat locker, actually. Again, we were trying to use as showcase as many things from Centerville or Appanoose County as possible. And I believe this, I'd have to talk with Molly, but I believe they said, okay, they can sell the meat in their store.
Yep.
But she's like, I can't give you the meat to sell.
Correct.
So it's just, I almost wonder if it's not like a profit protection for like the big packers. And well, that's maybe something that they just don't want to change.
Yeah, we've definitely like, had that thought. That,
like because if they make it, put it this way, if the same principle applies to me as I would go and buy that jam at whatever roadside stand the guy's got his dusty old pickup truck selling jam and some watermelons and stuff like that, it's like, heck yes, I'll take that home and, you know, eat it. I don't see why the local meat locker can't do that themselves. Mm-hmm. Because if that butcher is going to sell something that is below the grade that it should be, or maybe not safe to consume, that's their reputation that's gone. And that's their business that's gone.
Yep.
Versus, you know, these large packers, it's like, if they can get it into a package, that's profit.
Yep.
So I don't think that the little guys should be regulated. You know, this might be controversial, stating your own opinion here, should be regulated as strictly as the big guys. Mm-hmm. Because the difference is the big guys, they don't care what their reputation is.
Right.
The little guy,
it matters.
It matters tremendously to them. Yeah. So it's like, if there's a steak that, you know, maybe doesn't even look as good as it could be or whatever, they'll throw it into the trim pile and ground it into hamburger. You know, they're going to make sure that the quality of beef, chicken, pork, or whatever they're trying to push out the door is good, because as soon as it's not good, it's going to spread like mm-hmm. wildfire.
Yep, yep, you're 100% right.
But that's the world we live in.
Yep, money is power, unfortunately, and they got a lot of money than Packers do. So I don't know, it's all speculation, but we've had the same thought for sure. So let's go, I feel like we touched on the patch. Pumpkin. What's the name of the pumpkin patch?
Oh, just Papo's Pumpkin Patch.
Yeah.
So the Papo's Pumpkin Patch is actually named. So Papo is named after Papo is Al Clark, who is Molly's grandpa,
okay.
who's 93 years old and like an absolute staple of the community.
Sure. Cool.
So lived in the area like his whole life. Like I read his. I wish he wrote a little more in his memoirs, but like we went on our honeymoon, he kind of wrote his journal and stuff like that. I mean, he was in Appanoose County when it was coal towns, and
sure,
he'd talk about like he'd lay on his side and chip out coal, and then he'd get chunks of coal and like go legitimately sell it into the coal chutes and take it to the people's basements and stuff. Yep. And it's like, man, I wish they had YouTube back then. I'd watch the heck out of it.
Yeah.
You know? Yep. And he legitimately talks about it's 9 miles from Plano to Centerville. And he talks about he'd do that regularly. And I'm like, I think he's lying. I'm like, there ain't no way he's walking 9 miles to Centerville to go to a dance. Yeah. It's like, And then coming home, it's like he must have been hitchhiking somehow.
But. Oh, yeah. But you know what? That's so my dad talks about when he was a kid, and we're 5 miles from town.
Yeah.
But, you know, he'd talk about going to town, and they only you only went to town on Sunday unless you really needed something when he was a kid. But he would just go out and start walking, and everybody knew everybody in the neighborhood. And if somebody was coming by,
you just get on.
You just get on and go.
That makes sense.
And I'm like, so then what'd you do when you need to go home? And he said, well, you just made sure that you didn't stay in town until nobody was around, yeah. or else you did have to walk all the way home. Yeah. But you know, it was different times.
Yeah, it sounded like they'd go to town about once a month or so, because that's when the money would come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd go to the general store, and basically the money would go straight to the general store mm-hmm. to pay off everything that they borrowed from the general store the last year.
Yep.
And then like reload it back up. Oh, he told a good story in there, and it's like, I don't know if I should tell the story or not, but like they must have had like whatever they made soap out of, which was slick.
Yeah.
One time they slicked up the railroad tracks in front of the post office, so the train couldn't stop. They bought a whole bunch of like soap, slicked up the railroad tracks, and the train slid right past the post office. He's 93, so I'm guessing the statute of limitations is probably out.
Probably.
Kid, yeah. So we can leave that one in there. It's like, but yeah, different times would have been pretty cool to see some of that stuff.
Totally. Totally. But,
So you got a new planter this past year. Mm-hmm. How'd that go for you? What do you like? What do you dislike?
So, yeah, Kinsey brought a planter down for me to run, 3605, and well, it was really supposed to be a lot like simpler than it was, and when it showed up, it kind of had like everything that I was looking for in a bean planter. And I was like, this is going to be an issue. And it's like, I'm going to like this planter, and this planter is going to stay here, and it stayed. Dad's planter that he had was a box planter, and yeah. I mean, it planted a pile of acres and stuff. And just simply like trying to get some more stuff done, and it really just paid its way in there. Auto row shut off on soybeans. I was kind of cautious about if that pay, but like we bought in the normal amount of seed that we buy the plant, and we saved basically two boxes of beans.
Yep.
So like we're like, well, there's a payback there. We probably went from planting on a big day to 100 acres to like I could get like 150 acres in. And then the other one was is that we put the bulk fill on there, and legitimately we cut out a guy, because we would have a guy there filling like the boxes with yep. us, you know, so that we could get going, and you'd have to fill your boxes every 35-ish acres, yep. you know. So that was just a step up in production for us on the bean planting side, and makes nice life a little nicer. And then the other thing was too is, again, loops back to diversification. We have a 24-row Kinsey planter for corn. We only have one tractor that can pull that. And yep. we've had that tractor shit the bed a couple of times where we can't pull our corn planter. And so now if that really does happen, I can flip that 12-row, or that it's a 12-23, but I can flip it over to 12 and plant
keep
corn.
Going. Keep going doing on something.
Corn. So it did give us a little bit of a cushion there if the 24 row can't be going, the 12 row can be going. So yeah. just trying to get some more stuff done. And yeah, like I said, it showed up, and when it showed up, and I was like, this
you fell in love.
Yeah. Fell in love. It was like love at first seeding. Yeah. It was,
what do you pull that with?
The 8110.
Yeah.
So
even though it's inner plant.
Yep.
It pulls easy enough.
Yes.
That you can pull it with that versus that 24.
Yeah. Well, the 8110 would not pull the 24 row planter,
but it'll pull
more iron out there. Same number of row units, but yep. The weight and the difference in between the two tractors. But yeah, it walks all over with it.
Yeah.
It's fuel efficient. It's like needs three remotes or so, and it just fit. That's kind of the way it was. It's like it didn't extend us too much in one way or the other, and it just fit and came in and made us more productive and made my dad actually get back into a planter and plant. And it's like, I'm like, hey, I'm okay with that. It's like, because he wasn't out there having to fill boxes and do that, and dad's like, well, I'll go plant again. Because most of the time I would plant, you know, the majority of our acres, I'd go from corn, but with labor wise it's like it took, you know, everybody to stay in front of me and then getting sprayed up, and then I'd flip into the, you know, bean planter because we didn't want to plant 30-inch row beans.
Right.
So then we'd stay there, but then dad's like, well, I can kind of start piddling around with this one, fill me up once in the morning, and then I can fill up again sometime throughout the afternoon, and it surprisingly made us a lot more efficient. That's what it came down to.
Yep.
So.
Okay, so you got the planter, and you grew a crop. So did you, because you built that bin, did you sell your crop, or are you sitting there watching your net worth just drip everybody else?
Yes. So I don't know how, like, I guess I think we talked about it on the podcast of like, bad times are going to come. And I said, the best time would be is when I have not bought any of my inputs and had all my grain sold.
Yep.
Well, luckily I didn't really buy a lot of my inputs before things started to work their way down. So I got it 50% right. But on the one that hurts a little more, I have a lot of grain in the bins.
Yep.
So, you know, just the way things shook out, it was trying to get harvest done, trying to get it done relatively quickly.
Yep.
I probably would have shipped off more grain in December, realistically. We had a tremendously nice December, so I was pulling a lot of tile, doing every project that we could. Pumpkin patch still rocking and rolling. So then the year rolled over. I went on some vacation, and by the time I got back, it's like, ooh, this grain is going the wrong way quickly.
I know. So, I think a lot of people felt like that. And it's funny because, you know, everybody that builds grain bins will tell you, oh, you know, there's no better investment than a grain bin because you're gonna make that carry. You're going to make that carry.
Yep.
And this is one of those years where that didn't quite work that way. It looks like it didn't.
Not yet. Anyways, and it will probably do really good when I ship off that last bushel. It's like she'll just take on off, yep. And it's like, there we go. So luckily, you know, farming's risky, and I've found as many ways to try and diversify or like manage that risk.
Yep.
And I've paid for the education on trying to learn the commodity brokering type of stuff.
Yep.
And I don't really speculate in any way, shape, mm-hmm. or form.
Yeah.
So luckily when that crop went into the bins, I put puts on it.
Yeah.
So I protected my crop when it went into the bins.
Yep.
And so I've been able to at least capture the downside. Now mm-hmm. that does not mean I made any money off of that. It's right. Like, yeah, my puts are worth money. But the value lost in the grain is right. There. So something that I did to protect myself. So luckily it's not been as big of a bite. Yeah. And if I was to, this is not trading advice anyway. Yes, shape
don't worry.
It's like do exactly of what I'm opposite of what I'm going to tell you to do. What I'm scared of, and I'm dumping my grain right now, and we're in a record short position as far as I understand.
Yes.
I think we're kind of a little oversold, you know, and we're looking at, I don't know what the local cash bid on grain is, but it's not great. And I'm guessing there's probably guys that have threes now in mm-hmm. front yep. of their corn. Luckily Cargill's really pretty aggressive. So I'm still probably, I think I'm still over four. And that just shows, like, I haven't even looked at what the price I'm getting for my corn is.
Yep.
I'm shipping it. Like, yep. I'm getting rid of it. We got 9% interest rates. Like, let's get that interest rate paid down, mm-hmm. you know, farm with cash type of thing. Yep. Get rid of your grain. It's not doing very good. Yeah, you can capture the carry if you want to leave it in your bins, but you're selling it, you know, today. So if you want to capture a few cents, if you need to. Yep. But what I'm scared of is that if we don't get a dead cat bounce, or if we don't get some type of market rally, which if that could happen, mm-hmm. if we're in this record short, if we get any bullish news, maybe the funds change their position and decide to start, you know, yep. you know, maybe managing their risk and exiting some of those shorts. But if that happens, I feel like the farmers are going to start selling this grain off. And if they do that, I think your basis is going to go horrible.
Yep.
So I'm not bullish in that way. Yep. The other thing is too, is say we stay flat, those grain bins are full.
Yep.
So what's going to happen? Either your fall harvest price is going to be horrible because guys don't have the storage space because they're holding on to 2023 crop, they're all going to start dumping their bins, mm-hmm. and the buyers are going to know that. They aren't idiots. It's yep. like that's how they make their money, and your basis is going to be horrible.
Yep.
So even if you think you could carry it to keep your money out there, your interest rate's eating that part. Mm-hmm. And then if your basis, you know,
yep.
it goes from right now we're flat, but say who doesn't say that, you know, in July you don't see like a negative 20 basis or something like yeah. that. So
it is.
I'm taking the bird in the hand and running. It's like yep. I got the input prices right. It's like I didn't get rid of the grain on time, yep. but at least we're, you know, I'm 50% correct.
Yeah.
So.
Right. Oh, yeah. Well, the funds all know. I mean, you look out there and you do the math, and they know relatively close how much corn's come to market. Yeah. But more importantly, they know how much corn is out there that's going to have to be priced at some point.
Yep.
And that's part of the reason that they're so short, is because there's a pile of it. And we were just talking to somebody yesterday that I was talking to a guy last night. Our local commodity banquet is tonight, and we were setting up for it. And his son-in-law works for trucks and works for a guy that's got a bunch of trucks on the road, and they're not hauling squat for corn,
yeah.
for grain. It's just not moving because guys – and so to your point, It's going to move at some point.
It's got to move at some point.
I'm no better than you when it comes to marketing. The best marketing plan that I've had in the last 5 years was that 2 years ago or 3 years ago when I thought that we'd transferred all the bin. I got a CircuFlow.
Yeah.
And so it has to transfer like 4, 5, 6 times in a season in the last. And then we sell. When we load, we always load out of our big bin. And I thought that I had transferred all the corn out of the CircuFlow. And one day I was just casually walking by in like late July.
Yeah, I think it was like 2 years.
You know, slapped the bin. And I was like, damn. There's a lot of corn in there. And I went up the ladder. I'm like, damn. And I opened the hatch. It was clear full. It didn't transfer. And I was like, oh, man, that's good. That's a good deal.
Sorry, you should have been shipping out some corn.
Yeah, no shit. The only problem was the CircuFlow was full of corn that had drawn moisture. And we couldn't
we had to
cut a hole in the side of the bin. But
always fun.
Marketing-wise, it was top-notch.
Yeah.
I planned it.
It's a good problem.
I planned it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marketing is such an emotional deal. And I've tried really hard to take that emotion out of my marketing plan. Mm-hmm. But in Southern Iowa, insurance does not work for us. Mm-hmm. Because, and I don't know if we talked about this on the last podcast.
We did. You just don't have that. You don't have that yield.
No,
that
we don't have history. That yield guarantee. It's like we're insured to a little over 100 and some odd bushels of corn to the acre. So we can't use that to forward contract our grain like guys up around here is. I don't know what mm-hmm. your guys' insurance levels are on your corn, but it just doesn't work down there. I've tried to drop my crop insurance, but, to have a line of credit, they're like, you have to have crop insurance. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, well, can I just have wind and hail? Yeah. And they're like, no. I was like, okay.
They kind of got you by the...
Yeah, they got me a little bit. And it's fine. And it's like, I completely 100% under... Like, if the bank's giving you money to grow a crop, it's like they should be able to stipulate like, hey, you need to insure that crop. Just like if you get a car loan, you got to get insurance on your car to have a car loan. So I don't argue with that in any way, shape, or form. But it makes my marketing plan harder, but that's why I guess I've found the avenue of actually using like the calls and the puts, mainly more puts to at least protect the grain. So if like my marketing plan right now is if I get to a point where it's like I'd love to make that cash sale or that HTA for December mm-hmm. or something along those lines, but I don't want to take that risk of maybe not growing that crop because I don't know how many, like three out of the last 4 years, it's like June, July, we're not getting any rain. And like we've been able to grow somewhat of a crop these last couple of years, but I mean, there's been like, man, I don't know what's actually going to be out there. And it's a real fear. And then we catch that little bit of rain mm-hmm. and it manages to push us some grain out. That really scares you on selling stuff.
Yep.
So the worst case scenario is that if you buy a put that you're out your, initial, cost of buying the put, and then you at least did something. So that's where I've kind of moved my way into.
Yeah. I feel like you've done the cash flows on this year, and we've talked to other farmers in the area. It's kind of a batten down the hatches kind of year for farmers, man. I feel like, upcoming.
I don't think it's going to be a batten down the hatches type of year. I think it's going to be the next 5 years, the batten down the hatches.
Yeah.
It's like we go in cycles here, and I'd like to say maybe in 4 years we might have good times again, but – my guess 4 to 6 years is that we'll probably be in very tight margins for the next 4 to 6 years.
You think the president of the United States change is going to make any, is going to help us out at all?
Nah. I have no clue. Like probably not.
Yeah.
I would like to maybe even think that like right now I'd love to see $5 gas like that. Yeah. That'd be the best thing. Like, I'm sorry, the rest of the world. I'd love to see $5 gas because a third of our crop goes to ethanol, mm-hmm. And higher gas prices, higher energy prices, just helps out corn tremendously.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking at it, and man, I'm not like a studier of the markets in any way, shape, or form, but if like you're looking at stuff on the wall, the cattle herd is the smallest it's ever been.
Yep.
You know, the pigs, they're producing.
Shrunk.
But it's going down. But as soon as the pig market starts to pick back up, you guys are really good at overproducing, just mm-hmm. like the corn growers are.
Yep.
So maybe what we're feeding, our feed use isn't there. China's not buying. You know, there's too many things that are saying this isn't the way it should be going. Argentina's in, you know, South America's becoming heck of a good farmers, apparently. Mm-hmm. And from what I understand, if they ever figure out how to actually ship off their grain, we're in trouble.
If they ever build the roads.
Yeah, if they ever build the roads, we're in trouble. So it's like what I'd love to see, and it's like I'd love to see the renewable biodiesel. It's actually just renewable diesel actually come online.
Yep.
And I'd love to see like some way of getting ethanol be burned way more often.
Yeah.
You know, ethanol, we can regrow it every year, and we're really darn good at it. I don't know why we're not burning more than we are.
Yeah.
And then on the flip side of it, too, is this, from what I understood, is that if we put every single soybean into renewable biodiesel, it's like less than a third of what, like, we burn in diesel fuel in the United yeah. States. So, like, why are we not doing that other than the possibility is, like, if they do that, that's going to eat up 100% of the soybeans, and the soybean prices is going to skyrocket, yeah. and then they'll probably, like, price themselves out of being able to, you know, yep. actually be affordable diesel fuel. So I really don't see the way out of it right now, other than maybe everybody just takes a vacation for a year.
I go back to this, and I don't know. Nobody seems to have the answer, and I sure as hell don't have the answer. But, you know, I was actually pretty bullish about where the markets were going to end up at the beginning of the Russian-Ukraine war. Because I looked at that and I'm like, you've got two of the heaviest hitters in the whole wheat market
yep.
tied up in that mess. Ukraine's not going to have shit for a crop. No. And I don't know. Nobody seems to have an answer on how much produce they've actually been able to export. But the Russians, we got all their stuff tied up, and supposedly it's really difficult for them to move stuff, but they're moving it. But all this demand for wheat, and wheat is one of the bright spots as far as commodity prices here. It's not as high as it was, but it's still yeah. fairly high. But it's like, okay, you're going to buy that. The people that are buying that wheat, they're going to buy it from somewhere. So if the price of wheat is where it's at and corn and beans look like they are, a lot of this fringe acreage that used to be traditionally wheat, that should all be going back. But it doesn't seem to. It hasn't yet. I mean, I guess, and we probably won't know, but I've just been surprised. Like, even this year, I really thought that our grain exports would pick up to the rest of the world, but they haven't, and I don't know. And I think part of that's just because world demand has just been down. The Chinese aren't buying like they have been, and they got their own problems, and I don't know about everybody else. The whole damn thing's a mess.
It's just a mess. It is very – it's something that people do not think about, is that you're from small-town Iowa, but you're participating in 100% of global market.
Yeah.
It's what people really don't think about is, like, how does that affect me? I'm here, you yeah. know? It's like we're – and. It's the same attitude when people start to have a drought, and I suffer from that because down in Appanoose, Wayne County, we're drought prone soils.
Yep.
You know, we see the drought stress and it can fall on its face. So like when we see the drought, like we did last year, and you're like, we're so dry, nobody's getting rain. How the heck are these markets still going yeah. down? You know, it's like, yep. we're just right here. Mm-hmm. And that's what we don't think about, is that we're just right here when we're the small little part of the big picture.
Yep.
And it's really hard to like wrap your mind around that mm-hmm. what's happening on your farm doesn't matter. It right. does not matter comparatively yeah. to the rest of the world.
Hey, thanks for sticking with us. We appreciate every single one of you guys. Let's keep this ball rolling. Leave a review on Spotify or Apple. Follow us on YouTube. Pay the fee. Share it out with who you know. It all helps, guys. We appreciate every single one of you. We love you. Now, let's get back to the podcast.
So you went to Louisville, right?
Yes,
for the machinery show. What are what are some of your hot takes on equipment, if you have any? What do you like? What do you don't like? Is there a piece of equipment you got your eye on that you'd love to have? I don't know. Anything equipment. People love talking equipment.
So, yeah, and I'm probably the person not to talk big equipment with, I would say, because I don't know. I'm not the big tractor dude. I'm not the – I need this. It just doesn't attract me, the big shiny stuff, because I've started farming.
That's not – I thought you had the deal. You were going to do the – I thought you were doing the comparison demo between the X9 and the case.
Thought they were coming to your place.
Yeah, well, see, my comparison demo would be, can one of those actually even fit in my field?
Yeah.
What they'd bring that to me for is, like, hey, if you have small fields, our really big combine does actually fit. And I'm like, that's the only comparison.
Can you make it in this field?
Yeah, can you actually make it in the field? Good. Now you got the combine. Get the 50-foot head in.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, and if you mess up, you ditch it. And it's like, that's probably a pretty expensive ditch. So
okay, I'm sorry. I thought you had that all lined up.
You know, okay, I like looking at the shiny stuff. I mean, it's interesting to look at, but I'm not like drawn into it majorly. Definitely the AF 11 and then the CR 11, which is the case in New Holland. So those got revealed. I think those were probably just put out there to try and curb the X9 sales, you know, maybe for people that are looking at stuff. Definitely, I would say that the attitude towards purchasing stuff has gone from buy everything you can try and buy to like, nope, don't buy anything. The show was at least full again, and you know, people were showing up again. Price wise, I never priced really anything. I just really never do. But I like to walk around, see the stuff that I might own in 40 years. Just look at that stuff. There's things that I can see that I might be interested in every now and then, but it's really kind of just a reunion, I guess you could say, to go down there and hang out. Probably the coolest thing that I saw would be it'd have to be probably those two new combines coming out, like this, like actually like looking at them wise. I'd say that those were probably the showstopper for Louisville in 2024.
What do you think the used equipment market, how well do you think that's going to hold up? Because there is I was talking to KDK is our local auction company, and they've got a 4960 sitting there. He's having a sale, I think the 13th of March. 4960 has 5,000, like 5,800 original hours on it. He's pretty excited about it. And I'm like, you should be, because I'll bet you that brings, well, if that sale was 6 months ago, but I'm really curious to see like what that brings, because how much has this sediment started to like even affect the used market?
So I'll answer that by asking a question. What do you think is going to happen with the farmers that are at retirement age in the next 3 years?
It's going to make that decision, like, why fight it?
Yeah.
It's going to speed it up.
I think that a lot of the guys that weren't quite there for retirement last time, they ate into their equity over the, you know, say 2014 through 2020. They ate into their equity. And they probably maybe got to a spot where it was like, man, maybe I can't retire. And now they've been able to maybe flip that script, and they might say, I really don't want to do this again. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's time to, you know, walk away from it.
Yep.
So I think used equipment will hold strong, because if there's guys that need stuff, that's going to be what they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
But on the flip side of that too, is that I feel like there's going to be a lot more like retirement auctions and actual retirement auctions, not like retirement auction. And it's like, man, that's a lot of new stuff for a retirement auction. You know, it's like that guy, that must be in the contract. Hey, we'll sell your stuff at the bankruptcy sale, but we'll call it a retirement auction.
Yep.
You know, that type of thing. But I feel like there's going to be a lot more actual retirement auctions coming up. And I think it will probably stay stronger on the stuff that's affordable.
Yeah.
And I think the stuff that's not necessarily so affordable will be a lot softer.
Hit a lot harder.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. You bring up an interesting point because it is that is exactly the same thing as what the hog business is going through, because you look at the guys out there that have either, you know, they either started out, they either own their own sows or they started out owning a sow unit. I mean, I know quite a few guys that started out when that whole sow unit thing got going and they owned shares with like 8 other people.
Yep.
And then the next thing you know, they had 6 people and each one of those guys built another 12 or 2 more 12s. And then there was 4 people. And then it got to where you were the single guy left in the sow unit and you bought everybody else out, or there's 2 guys and you've been through this mess. And I'm 50.
I think you're 54.
53.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's already starting to go.
Oh, it's bad. Not that long ago, I had somebody call me and ask me how old I was, and I said like 26. and then I hung up the phone and I go, oh boy, that is not good. It's like, I better call them back and say, hey, I lied to you on accident, but we're off by a few years. So
yeah, well, I should.
It's easy for me.
30 years.
It's easy for me because whatever the year is, that's my age. So 20, I was born 2000. Okay. So. 24, yeah. Turned 24 this month, actually.
Yeah. Well, anyway.
So hopefully I can remember that in my elderly years.
Yeah, somebody's got to. Somebody's got to keep it straight. Yeah. But those guys are looking at the exact same thing. Like, they have burned through so much equity.
Yep.
And they're looking at this thing now coming back, and they're like, why? Am I going to stay in this till I'm 70? Yep. Probably not. And I think you're going to see more and more and more on the hog side, and you've already seen it in the cattle. I mean,
yep.
There's a lot of guys that are just giving up on that deal, and that's part of the reason why your cow herd has shrunk so much.
So like, there's probably an outlier there that, like, you got to look at. I don't know what the national average age for a farmer is, but I think 63 is kind of what I'm, like, off the top of my head, it's around 63. So they're 2 years away from what they probably should retire. And it's like, that's the majority of the people that are farmers.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to look at the, like, used equipment market, that's there, possibly could bring it down. And then obviously people need the cash flow. But then you got the younger guys like me. If you still want to, you know, category me with the younger guys, because I'm 32 now, you know, and I did start farming at what would be 22. So basically that's when I started farming. So I don't know if you could still categorize me as the young guy, but there's also what's going to happen with the ground in the next,
mm-hmm.
you know, 5 or 10 years.
Yep.
There's going to be opportunities. And, you know, I'd like to think that it's like, I think the government's going to want to go after ground and see in the form of CRP pretty hard. But I think it's going to come down to, like, who's going to save the family farms and stuff. And it's going to be the landowners.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be the landowners that need to make that conscious decision about who they're actually renting their ground to.
Or selling it to.
Or selling it to. Like,
Don't sell it to BlackRock.
Yeah, you know, so it's like, are you trying to support, you know, like, keep family farms alive? And by you do that, I wish that I've always wanted to do a video about how the money that comes in through a farm really affects the small communities.
Yep.
You talk about this all the time. Yeah.
So it's like, I am not a fan of CRP in any way, shape, or form. I shouldn't say that. Like, I think what the CRP program does is good, but how it's ran, I am not a fan of in any way, shape, or form. Yep. Because if you look at that, it's the government paying a landlord to grow supposedly grass, but it usually turns into cedar trees and nasty weeds and stuff like mm-hmm. that. But it's supposed to be a set aside to actually help support the crop prices. That's what it's supposed to do. But that does not help out the small communities, because a lot of the people that own the ground, the CRP ground, are basically investors from not in the community.
They're absentee landlords.
So like that means that the government's paying somebody in a different state, you know, that money. So then their money gets put into that area. But if you rent that ground to a farmer, you know, that farmer puts all those inputs into that ground, and just think about the money that gets actually shoved into the actual community by farming that piece of ground.
Yep.
And the jobs that that supports. Yep. Like, I wanted to do a video like that, but I can't even wrap my head around it because it just expands exponentially so quickly versus like the CRP is, it goes straight to the government, to the landlord. And yeah, maybe the guy that they hire to come mow it or burn it off makes a little bit of money, but yep, that doesn't happen. And where, again, coming back to that is that the landlords that need to be conscious about who maybe they're renting their ground to is the fact that maybe corporation farms are going to really try and kick up in the next few years. And if they do that, then that money's getting shipped off again.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of things. It could be a very interesting next 10 years in ag.
Yep.
Could be a very interesting next 10 years.
I think we say that about every 10 years.
Yeah. I
mean, and every 10 years, it's a very interesting 10 years. It's a
very interesting deal.
You know, yeah, it is always a very interesting 10 years.
It's scary to think about. I mean, people talk about China buying United States farm ground, black corporations like BlackRock and Vanguard, and because everybody wants ground. It's great store of value. My worry, too, is development. How much ground are we just going to keep selling off and turn into development? I mean... Yeah. Or turn into city or turn into urban areas. I mean, you look at just north of us, like my girlfriend, my fiance now, I got to get used to saying that.
Ex-girlfriend.
Yeah. Yeah. She grew up in North Liberty, right north of Iowa City. And when she started there, it was all farm ground, all farm ground, highways, couple highways, no, barely any farm ground left now. It just keeps moving south. And it's just like, how much are we just going to keep? Like, there's got to be a point where we're like, all right, we got to keep some agriculture around here, you know?
Well,
maybe not yet. Look what we've been able to do. We're like, our ending stocks are massive. Mm-hmm. So we haven't reached that point.
Yeah.
Yet. You know, we haven't reached that point yet. I personally, I don't think like the sprawl of the urban area is our biggest.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. Do you think in like 50 years that's going to be a problem? Like, how much developments came your way since you've been alive? Our way since you've been alive.
29 houses that have come? I mean, you know.
Yeah.
We got a housing development right south of us that I used to crop rent that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, though, probably is the best use for that ground because it wasn't worth a shit to farm.
Yeah. Yeah, I just think about, for me, like long term, like, yeah, the foreign countries, large corporations, urban sprawl, all something to be mindful of for sure.
And again, that loops back to where we just started, is like, you got to have the diversification to be able to like weather those storms.
Yep.
Because what president said that, you know, farming's like the worst business in the world?
Yeah.
It's like the only person that buys everything at retail prices and sells everything at wholesale prices.
Yep.
Farming at its core is a great life if you can manage it.
Yep.
It's rewarding, you know. There's really not a lot of things like that you can do it. Horrible business. Horrible business. It's like risk. Unbelievable risk. Low profit margins a lot of the time.
Capital intensive.
Yeah.
Mother Nature.
Mother Nature, you know, can just ruin your day really quickly, but you got to love it to do it.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, you got to get some diversification out there, because if you're a corn and soybean grower and that's all you do, or even if you're just hog producers, it's
scale.
You can't put all your eggs in one basket at all, because that, it's like that table's getting wobbly. You
know? Yeah.
That table is getting wobbly.
Yeah.
And you talk, it is, it's a risky business. And then on top of it, you know, it's hard enough. And then you got to like fight addictions. And did you lock the door? This isn't like an intervention, I don't think, because I don't know enough, but do you have a problem when it comes to like earth moving equipment?
Yeah, I
like
do.
It seems to be yeah. Like you, yeah. I see all this old, like, do you have a little twinge that you want to be in an antique dirt mover, or what's,
I don't know.
What's
like,
the deal
I would,
with that?
I would like, if I was not farming, I'd probably be moving dirt. I mean, it taking a farm that's been, you know, neglected over the years,
yep,
and fixing it up and making it look pretty just like itches that tickle. Yep. You know, it just really does. It's like solving a problem. Yeah. I mean, I really do enjoy that.
Some people would say that's creating a problem, but
yeah,
so,
I don't know.
So what do you, so do you got, do you have your own, do you have your own, dozer and
so
hoe
I have
and all that?
I have like a 1950s D6 dozer, that I got from a landlord, that there's videos on like getting it started and stuff. And I really didn't think that I could ever actually push dirt with it. And I did. Tried to buy an actual dozer a little bit this fall, but didn't get it done.
Yeah.
So I don't have a dozer. My dad has a dozer. Bought an excavator because my dad's was what I was using was getting worn out. So I've, I can about do it all. Just need a really... I need a little dozer, then I need a medium dozer, and then I need a really big dozer.
Right.
So so those are the next three steps, I think.
It's kind of fun, and that is kind of addictive.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know a fair number of people that had a neighbor that did a lot of dirt work for them.
Yep.
And then, surprisingly, it seems like building a hog building is kind of like the trigger for that, because they would... they would build one building, and then so-and-so is doing all the dirt work. And then the next thing you know, they build another hog building, and then they're there with the neighbor, and they're like, well, I'm going to backfill it myself because I got this dozer that was like his used dozer. Yeah. And then it doesn't take very long, and then they're like, oh, yeah, you know, I'm just going to do this myself. I bought this hoe, you know, at a Ritchie Brothers auction and, you know, replaced every hydraulic line. And, and the next thing you know... they're like, they're hooked.
Yeah. So you could say that's the addiction part, and I like doing it. And again, you got to like doing stuff. But again, to lower the risk of like that ground is putting the proper drainage under it, you know, removing the trees that shouldn't be there.
Yeah.
I'm not a kill every tree type of dude by any way, shape, or form. But like getting things cleaned up where that ground can produce a crop that it should produce every single year. That lowers the risk of farming.
Yeah.
So the way I looked at moving into drainage and fixing up farms and doing those things was just another risk management deal of fix this up, I can farm it, and I feel better about putting that investment into that crop.
Yeah.
Because again, we don't have the crop insurance to back it up.
Yeah.
So it doesn't mean I don't pattern tile out the whole thing and put terraces where every terrace needs to be, and there ain't no tree that, you know, is going to rob the nutrients of it. And the man, I've somehow got rid of all the deer, which I haven't been able to do.
Right.
And then Mother Nature doesn't show up with a big old hailstorm and absolutely wipe me out. So, but you can only do so much and control the things you can control, and don't worry about the things you can't, and fixing wet spots and, you know, stopping the gully washers, which is a thing that people like really view as like runoff is horrible for, you know, farming. It's like control all that stuff. It's like, it's kind of like, it's almost your responsibility as the manager of that land, because you don't own it. You're just renting it from the next generation.
Yeah.
So like leave it in a better shape than you took onto it, you know, and having the ability to do that. It's really what you should do. It is what you should do.
Yeah.
So. You're a big tile guy. Are you still tuning tile for people?
I would rather do it for myself.
Yeah.
So I will do it for other people, but I, you know, I would rather do it for myself.
Yeah.
And this year I didn't get nearly as much in as I normally would try to get in with the pumpkin patch. I was really kind of worried about how we're going to get harvest and everything else done, because I was only harvesting Monday through Thursday, and I was at the pumpkin patch Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So like we basically 3 out of the 7 days I wasn't there at the farm. So I was a little worried about how much we were going to be able to get done, but we still were able to knock it out. Yep. So, and then I think I pulled tile again for the third year in a row on Christmas Eve. So it's like, I've got a hard deadline that I'm supposed to be done pulling tile by noon on Christmas Eve. So
there you go.
She's shaking her head. Yes.
Yep. So, that's happened the last 3 years, which it really realistically shouldn't happen.
No,
so.
It shouldn't, but that's the crazy world we live in right now. It seems like,
yes.
And yeah, you can't go off the calendar because you just never know.
No, it. Yeah, there's. It's just. I think we're setting up for probably a pretty lean 2023 or 2024, and hopefully some things change. We'll see what happens after the election, I guess.
Yep.
I can't say one side getting in or the other would help us out in any way, shape, or form. I don't know if it even hurt us one way or the other, realistically.
Yep.
So I just want to see people, you know, maybe start burning more ethanol. It's like that's what I'd like to see.
So what's your focus for this year? What's the one thing that is top priority?
What excites you the most about what you got going?
Looking forward to another year at the pumpkin patch. So like that's pretty high up there. Improve on the things that we've gotten feedback for. On top of that, just really kind of button down the hatches and get set up for if bad things do happen. Because, you know, if bad things do happen and you're prepared for it, you've got a chance. If you prepare for bad things and they don't happen, you're going to be doing fine. You might not be doing as good as the person that continued to risk things. Focus on the things that I'm doing good at and manage my time as efficiently as I can. It feels like I'm trying to use 25 hours out of the day. so try and focus on the things that are giving me the return and just keep farming in 2025, I guess. That's realistically.
That's a good goal to have.
That's my goal for 2024 is to be able to farm in 2025.
That is a good goal to have.
Any interest in raising livestock ever? I know we talked about it a little bit before.
Yeah, I would be, again, we talk about time-wise. Someday I'd like to be able to start walking some of the products that I raise off the farm, which means feed them the corn, feed them the hay that I produce. How I do that yet, I've not completely figured it out. I don't think I can get into mama cows. Not really looking at the hog barns because of reasons that we've talked about previously, besides the time requirement for the hog barns. You know, there's always the option that you look at like goats or sheep or something along those lines too. But for right now, it's we'll see what happens. That might be the next diversification is actually getting into some livestock.
Farmer Grade's got your back.
Yeah. So, but right now we're just kind of sitting on our hands. Let's see what happens with this cattle market. I would say it's probably not time to be trying to buy into the cattle market.
Yep.
So everything ebbs and flows. We'll see what happens here after a little while. See if I can find a way to, you know, venture out into whatever the next aspects is. But maybe instead of hogs or cattle or something along those lines, I might be looking at like apple trees.
Yep.
You know, I looked at Christmas trees a little bit. It's like, I'm going to stay away from Christmas trees, but you know, maybe apple trees, you know, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
So
side note, hog manure grows massive pumpkins.
We'll just start shipping some down. I need 3 acres worth. I need 3 acres worth. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at, you know, stay with the recipe that's working.
Yep.
And stay within your means, you know, look at where your expenses are at, where you can, you know, maybe cut some of those things. And the big ones probably like, what people don't want to cut is like your family living, you know, like something that, you know, I've been blessed with, I guess, was like my cost of living as I try and keep that as low as humanly possible.
Yep.
Like for say is that we love the TikTok. Everybody thought I had the golden spoon in the last one in your comment sections or whatever. I guess they never actually listened to the whole podcast.
Happens a lot. Yeah, so, trust me.
You know, for me, like a big saving grace is that low cost of living. So like my dad bought a farm and it was dilapidated and stuff. So I invested money into like renovating it. So it's like my house payment's not there.
Yeah.
So like try and focus on those things. It's like, Don't be going and buying yourself a new pickup truck. Don't be, you know, doing all that stuff. It's just try and be ready for those opportunities. And that might mean that you drive the beat up pickup truck for another.
Keep your powder dry.
Yep. Is that a good way of saying that?
That's a great way of saying that.
Yeah. I wish I could say, hey, I've got a lot of exciting, you know, fancy things that I'm going to do. It's like, might be a hard year of YouTube, and where it's like, yeah, I didn't do anything this year.
Yeah.
You know, well, like, come along, kids. Like, today, come along.
This year, with this year, the goal is to pay down debt.
Yeah.
You know, that is the goal. This year is to pay down debt.
Yeah.
So we're going to load everybody up, and we're going to cruise the byways of Appanoose County and see how many cans we can get.
Yeah.
Come along.
That ain't a bad idea.
Yeah.
It's like, so.
Reality, though, that's reality of how things are. So, no, I think it's crazy. You're doing YouTube. Guys are doing the pumpkin patch. You're farming. You're doing hay. You're tiling.
Yep.
How do you keep it all straight? And what drives you to just keep going?
So, payments. Payments is what drives you to keep going. So I would. Luckily, everything that you just talked about is that I can intertwine it all.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't gotten so far outside of a box to where what I'm doing doesn't work with each other, which is, if I looked at like that in terms of diversification, is not great. But in terms of being able to manage all those irons in the fire, they all kind of weave in and out. So if you talk about the YouTube channel, obviously I can do that while I'm at work, and then it does make money. You know, when I started, didn't really know that it would make money, but that's a blessing, you know, because I can work on it whenever I want to work on it. At night, like, might edit a video in the car ride home, you know, those type of things. So like that's time management. It does slow things down. Farming, obviously that is pretty much priority number one. It is priority number one, because the farm is what feeds everything else. So that's what you have to put first. And it is your security. So those two, they tie in well together. The pumpkin patch was bring on some extra labor. And then on the flip side of it, it's only open for six, seven weekends we're doing now. We're going to do eight weekends this year. So we're going to open on September 1st this year, because we're going to grow some zinnias, some sunflowers, and we might plant apple trees, but they won't be ready for 5 years. So we're going to open that up a little bit. We're going to revamp how I was there on Fridays. Most likely I won't be there on Fridays unless we're doing field trips. Really fun. I mean, to be able to talk to young kids about ag and like, we didn't talk about this, but one of the really fun things about being out there in the pumpkin patch, I was out there literally the one cutting the pumpkins for the kids.
Yep.
And then when they walk down this path, the first pumpkin they see, that is the one that they want. You know, it's like, okay, my goal is to, like, I'm going to bring you out there and like actually like look at it. So then you ask them, I'm like, so what do you want looking for in a pumpkin? And they say big. And it's like, okay, yeah, they're all going to say basically big. And then you just start asking them, like, do you like the round ones? Or do you like the oval-shaped ones? Well, do you like ones with the deeper ribs or the smoother-looking ones? Do you want ones that have bumps on it? And then they, at some point in time, they go, I don't know. And I said, well, why don't I go show you one of these? And then they wander out there, and then they just it's like once they stepped off that path into the unknown, they like conquer a little fear, and then they're after it.
Yeah.
So going back to that, so the pumpkin patch, I'll probably only be there on Saturdays and Sundays this year unless we have field trips. So we're going to time manage that. And then again, Molly does run the pumpkin patch. Yeah. So that's kind of her gig. So it's not as time demanding on me other than planting the pumpkins and taking care of them, but that's not horrible by any means. And then if you talk about tiling's, you know, right there at the end of the year, and I try and get as much of that done as possible because of all the benefits of it, but that is the icing on the cake,
yeah,
if that makes sense. So that's how I'm able to juggle hay. All of those things.
Did you have hay in there too?
Yeah. Well, hay's in there. That's the summertime, you know. That works because usually we're spraying and haying at the same time. Yep. You can manage those two things. And then, you know, you haul the hay in the winter when you're not doing any other farming, it's like the wintertime seems to go by faster and faster every year. You're at conferences here, conferences there, farm show here, farm show there, get shipped off to this meeting there. So it seems to eat away faster and faster. And then, you know, this year trying to sell all that corn before it goes to $2 is that's like a get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to try and haul grain. It's like it is the little things that you can do to make yourself more efficient. Like I'm still trying to work full days right now because the weather's good outside, but I'll wake up, haul 2 loads of corn, which it's a 2.5 hour round trip for us to do that. Yep. So I'll work 5 hours before 10 o'clock or so, but then I can still kick in a full day. Maybe I don't take 2 loads and I just get 1 load out, and then I'm back and ready to go to work at 8 o'clock. Yep. So trying to find ways to sneak in those little projects to get things done.
Well,
It is not easy, but it's not easy. Sometimes things do suffer for it, but we can still get it done.
Worth it for the long run.
Yep. Well, if idle hands are the devil's plaything, he can't even catch you.
Yeah. He's the holiest man around then. He's
pure as the wind-driven snow.
Yeah.
But
what about kids?
If I can find my day to be lazy on the couch, I try and do that. But I can go for it's like they go, what do you want to do for vacation? Like
nothing.
Nothing. Like nothing. Like I don't even want my cell phone on me. Like absolutely nothing. Like if I woke up today and it's like I found a show that I wanted to watch or football on TV or something like that, and I could spend a whole day just doing that, it's like that is my little vacation.
Gosh, you two could call each other.
I know. I mean, that's truth. It is, though. And you're just – it's the truth. We don't go and do much either, and that's the reason. You're just so done. You're working all those hours and doing all that stuff. You just get to the point where you're like, man, just chilling, not having to worry about anything. That's a good peace of mind.
And you need that too.
Yeah.
Something that like really surprised me that I was worried about was, okay, harvest this year and having the pumpkin patch, right? Now, granted, I said I was there for 3 days and probably going to be 2 this year. It was like I was more productive those 4 days that I was back by taking 2 or 3 days off. Now I was still working, but like taking the mental break from harvest a little bit, almost like I was energized and ready to go back on Monday to hit it hard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I was more productive in the 4 days that I was farming by actually taking a weekend.
Yeah.
Than being like, we're going to grind for every day until we're done.
We underestimate the importance of rest.
Yep. You really
do. You do.
Like, you're just being able to step away and like do that stuff.
Yeah.
That was a pleasant surprise. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. Moods are better. Everybody's in, everything's going smooth. You know, 2 cranky dudes sitting next to each other that haven't slept that much in, 2 weeks. It's like that's a recipe for just success.
Yeah.
So it's like, realistically, it was like, oh, believe it or not, if you're having issues, take a weekend.
Yeah.
Take a weekend. Even if it ain't raining, just take a weekend and you'll just be like, oh, life's
good.
Life's good.
Yeah.
You can keep going.
So. What about kids? You got a lot going, but I know next generation's important to you. Yep. So
that's something that we'd like to bring in. So it's like now that'd be the next thing that on top of it. And I've always been kind of worried about, the time for kids. And people say like, oh, someday you'll know when you're ready for kids and like doing that and stuff.
What do you got to say about that?
No, you don't. That's somebody that's just telling you what you want to hear.
Yeah,
you're never ready.
Well, I would argue differently than that. Definitely like being able to like at the pumpkin patch, like, I'm ready. I'm ready for kids.
Well, that's so, what I was, you know what, like, you talking yeah,
like,
about
it,
that.
It's like it did. It finally clicked. Like, I know a lot of people say is that it's like you just got to put your head down and, you know, figure your way through it. And something did click, and it was like, yeah. It's
I like this.
Maybe that's time good. To, you know, bring on the monsters.
You know? Yeah, there you
so,
go.
But then every now and then we get to go hang out with my nieces and nephews, and it's like,
oh boy,
wow, it's nice. We get to go home now. Yeah. But, you know, yeah. It's like to see that, you know, the rest of our family has started families, to be able to see, like, the reward that the love that their kids have for mm-hmm. their parents, and just how that's changed their life. It clicked. Like, yep. They might have been saying that as a saying, but, you know, it's like, yeah, I guess I'm ready. I'm mm-hmm. not as worried about it as I was in the past. Other than I will – the one thing that I'm worried about is being able to make sure that I do everything that I can to, like, make sure that I'm there for all the important things.
Yeah, I think – yep.
So, like, that's what I'm going to really, really want to do as, like, as a parent. – And maybe it was one of the things that I was worried about in the younger years is, like, I need to be able to be here and focus on this. But maybe if we're at a point where it's like, okay, I can take the evening off tonight to go see a basketball game and like do that stuff and be able to prioritize those things. Mm-hmm. And yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's the thing. The one thing that worries me about kids is just the world we live in today. It's crazy. It gets crazier and crazier. And so, showing up for your kids and being there and how to protect them from the craziness is kind of the two big things I think about.
Yeah. And so one thing I also learned is that, so we did a Santa Claus at the patch or whatever, and, how in touch I am with the current lingo of the younger generation.
Yeah. Like, it ain't going to get any better.
Yeah. Because I was like Santa or whatever. And it's like, I had no clue what any of the toys were that they're, I wasn't Santa. That was a real Santa. Okay. Yeah. No, but like, yeah, I had no clue what the toys were of the day and stuff like that. And it's like, ooh, buddy. So, and then I also learned that people are way too comfortable giving like fresh babies to a Santa Claus. And like, I've always been like, really like people, oh, do you want to hold the baby? And it's like, no, like, I mean, like, no, I don't, like, no, it's like, because I'm like, I'll be so nervous the entire time, the kid's going to cry, and I'm like, no satisfaction out of holding the baby's going to happen. Yeah. I'm like, I'm perfectly good, like, hanging out with him and seeing him.
I'm the same way.
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, here comes, you know, this fresh, and I'm just holding a fresh baby, and it's like, it's on my, you know, real beard. I can't look up because then I'm going to have, like, you know, the whole beard halfway pulled down the face thing. So, but, yeah, it was a great experience.
All right, well, I think I got everything off my chest. Did you get everything off yours?
I did. I feel like that was a good conversation.
I do, too. I think we shot the shit pretty good. How do you feel?
First time ever.
How do you feel?
I feel good.
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 Got all your words out.
Most of them.
Yeah, good.
I stumble over a whole bunch of them. They laying on the floor.
Well, if we don't stop now, we'll start talking about feelings, and so I don't want any of that, so we better end.
Well, we're going to wrap it up. So, guys, if you got any value from the show, go follow Ben. Go follow the Pumpkin Patch. Support them, guys. I think what they're doing is awesome. Obviously, you guys heard it. Pretty sweet. Go follow them. Share the show. Leave a review. Go to farmergrade.com if you want some meat. And we'll see you back here next week for another episode.